instruments of the Four-Way's Harness.
Say one of our names. Say your name again.
Four. Three.
Hi, this is Dave Schrader from Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio. You're listening to Tim Renee Graham.
Thank you so very much.
This is Mike McDowell from the Indiana Ghost Crackers and Chaos Tours saying welcome, kid, to...
Welcome to the chaos and get down with the sickness.
Yeah.
Say your name again.
Stop it.
Say it again.
This is Jeff Belanger, and when I'm not out looking for ghosts, haunted places, and weird stuff all over the planet, I'm listening to Paranormal Radio with Renee Graham. I never miss a show, and if you miss a show, I swear I'll haunt you.
Thank you. That's good. Paranormal Radio, taking you beyond the limits. Sundays, 6 to 7 p.m. Central.
Simulcast on SRN Live.
Whispers Estate, Mitchell, Indiana. 3,700 square foot of haunted Victorian home. Where else can you find apparitions of children? Home of the Big Black. Apparitions? Four graves in the backyard and a pit of hearts. This is one of the most terrifying places in America. Featured in Ghost Stories 2, Children of the Grave, and other numerous radio and book features. Whispers Estate, every house has a story.
Hello, all you beautiful people. So glad that everyone's here to join us this evening. Couple of quick announcements, and I am pleased to have the Mid-South coming this weekend. Is my mic even on, Phil?
Yeah,
you sure? I can't hear myself.
My headphones
up. That would be your job.
I did turn them up.
You did turn them up. That's right. Frown at me some more. I'm telling everybody. Phil's frowning at me. anyway, this weekend, I dare you. Go on down to the Mid-South Paranormal Convention. That is the place to be. If you can't make any other paranormal conventions this year, be sure to hit the Mid-South Paranormal Convention, hosted by Keith Age. There are some heavy hitters in the paranormal field there all weekend long. Of course, the Brothers Booth. I'm going to have some more wine, and this is actually the first time I've actually tried to talk today. Phil had me shackled to the vacuum cleaner. He made me clean the freaking house today. I can't even believe it. I got a weekend off. First time in, 4 months? And this is what you do to me. Friday night, there's going to be the Orb Tones. It's going to be a hell of a party. So hotel rooms are going fast. Tickets are going fast. But I do have a couple of tickets here. If you want to email me at deadspeakradio@yahoo.com, the first two people that are coming from different households will get complimentary passes. Yes, complimentary weekend passes to the Mid-South Paranormal Convention. So, better be there. I dare ya. The other heavy hitter that's coming up this weekend, it's actually the following weekend, August 11th. That's my birthday. We will be down at the Hannah House in Indianapolis, Indiana for the 6th annual meet and greet. If you've not ever been to Hannah House before, it's a beautiful, beautiful, historical and haunted location. There will be tours going on, and there will be a number of people there. We'll have Keith Age there. We'll have a number of other paranormal, paraprofessionals, para-celebrities. If you want to go, it's free. If you want to bring your team, that's free too. Just bring your table and chairs. So August the 11th, noon to 4. So without any further ado, I could get into talking about cats. You want me to talk about cats, Phil?
No, don't start
talking about cats.
No.
Cats and animal farming for the pet industry. We've had some interesting experiences. He's shaking his head. Okay. I have a very special treat for everybody tonight. As a guest, I have a very dear friend and an author who I read his first book a year ago, and it completely blew me away. His very, very first novel was fabulous. The human element was fabulous. When I first started reading it, I thought, okay, you know, this is a favor for a friend. You know, I'll go ahead and do it. But it completely blew me away. The depth, as well as the use of classical hauntings. I tell you, R.J. Sullivan spun a tale that kept me reading. I couldn't put it down. So when he asked me to read his soon-to-be-released newest novel, Haunting Obsession, I jumped at it. And I tell you, I read it in one sitting. And you folks are going to be able to get a sneak peek at the inside of the very well organized but terribly twisted mind of R.J. Sullivan. Are you still here with me, R.J.?
I'm right here.
Oh, good. I didn't lose you. Good. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it, and thanks for that introduction, and I'll look forward to wishing you a happy birthday, R.J. Sullivan.
Well, thank you. So, you don't mind that I think you're just a tad bit twisted?
Well, yeah, that's fine. I can certainly appreciate that.
Appreciate that in a good way, or were you a little surprised?
Oh, I was fine with it, you know. I was thinking, oh, when we got to the twisted, it made me pause a bit, but hey, you know. We're all a little twisted, right?
You know what? We are. And I think, you know, one of my favorite movies is Stand By Me. And one of the things that I really, really like about that movie is the depth of humanity that is seen in it. And there's a famous line that comes from River Phoenix, and he says, "We're all messed up, Gordy." And that's very, very true, RJ. We are all messed up. But the twistedness in this case comes from, I think you have done a beautiful job and very eloquently have displayed a lot of our innermost feelings within Haunting Obsession with relationships and desires. And so from that perspective, you know, yeah, we are all twisted, but, you know, damn, you nailed it. I mean, some of the really messed up stuff that we don't talk to anybody about, you friggin' nailed it.
Well, you know, I started off as a fan, and uh-huh. Depending on what topic you're talking about, the fandom hits different levels for different people, and I really wanted to explore that. We know sports fans, we know TV show fans, we know, you know, in this case, fans of Hollywood idols, that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And I wanted to take something very specific and explore, you know, what does that mean when it gets maybe a little out of control and when things go a little bit differently from what you expect.
Wow, that was an anonymous statement. Having read the book, I know exactly what RJ is talking about. But let's go back just a little bit. One of the things that piqued my interest was, and I think you answered it there in saying that you were always a fan of horror novels. And I wondered, as I was sitting down going over my notes for our interview this evening, what piqued your interest in the paranormal, and why would your first books be about the paranormal?
That's an interesting question, because I grew up reading science fiction and
okay.
always imagined I would go on to write science fiction primarily. I think my ghosts come, for that reason, being less of a ghost investigator, and I know about that through acquaintances that I know. I don't participate in that quite so much, but I know the stories, I know a lot of the theories and that sort of thing. But I come at it from a literary perspective. Both of my ghosts in Haunting Blue and Haunting Obsession have more of a literary quality to them. They represent something outside of just being, you know, the antagonist to the story. And I pulled from a lot of the ghost story tropes from classic literature, kind of mixed it with some more modern things.
Mm-hmm.
And then used all that to kind of bring my own ideas into it. So they, you know, as far as what people might expect, as far as is it going to fit what you might expect in a scientific perspective, I probably speak less about that, but they worked as literary devices. That was the approach I took. And as it happened, when Haunting Blue came to mind several years ago, it was the characters I wanted to write about first, and the ghost aspect just happened to work really well with what I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And very well, I might add. That book really blew me away, RJ.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
No, you're welcome.
You know, it being the first one, you just kind of put it out there and hope
right.
and keep your fingers crossed and hope for the best, and, you know. It took a long time to get there, and I'd heard good and bad, and you take those chances, and you go, I don't know, and then some of the good word comes back, and you feel a whole lot better that you took that risk.
But isn't that true with any creative work, whether you're a sculptor or a musician or a poet or, you know, a literary author? You invest so much of what truly is deep within you, and you put it out there. It's sort of like just throwing the cards to the wind and seeing where they fall.
That can be true. I think anything worth doing, what commercial or whether it's art for its own sake, if you know, I mean, you can do something that's kind of hacky and commercial for making money, and we've all experienced that and know what that's like. But
sure.
I think when someone really is trying to say something and put it out there, and you don't know, it has kind of a very vulnerable feeling to it, you know.
Yeah.
Where you're not sure. You kind of got your baby out there, and you're like, okay, I guess we'll see. You know?
They don't like my story, so they don't like me as a person. But that's
right.
not it
well,
at all.
No, exactly. But you know, that's usually where the best work's done too. I find, and
yes.
I find that from when I go through other people's work, as you know, we share a lot, authors amongst each other, and you go, okay, well, this was very good, but here you really tap something a little more personal, and those are usually the best ones.
Speaking of that, RJ, reading both of your works, it struck me that you were in a completely different place when you wrote each of them. Both novels were very good, but good for different reasons and some of the same reasons. So what prompted you to write Haunting Obsession?
Oh, okay.
Whoa!
Well, and I can, you know, the reason why, and you're absolutely right, I was in a completely different place. The reason being is Haunting Blue, when you throw in all the years it took to actually get it published, you know, the thing about the first novel is, you know, I worked at it for over a decade to get it out there.
Oh, wow. So, okay, had no idea.
When you say you were in a completely different place, that's absolutely right, because I wrote, I started Haunting Obsession about a year ago now, finished it up in November, and you know, you've read it, I finished it, and I'm like, well, okay, what do I do with this? I guess I'll just send it and see what they think, because
okay.
I really wasn't sure what the reception was going to be. I knew who I wanted to give it to. I knew that it's Seven Star, the publisher I'm with now. If they wanted it, I wanted them to have it. And,
right.
And then they jumped right on it, which of course made me really happy. But it was one of those things where you're looking at writing that more or less, minus the revisions, was about a decade apart. So maybe that answers your question there.
Okay, it does. It does. You mentioned that you gave it to a publisher, and that ended up being a very advantageous move for you that led to how many books more do they want from you?
Well, they want three more.
Right on!
This one plus three more, so I'll be putting one out a year for the next 3 years.
How do you feel about that? Does that scare the hell out of you?
I have to keep reminding myself it's a good problem.
Exactly.
Yeah. Haunting Obsession came about when I should have been working on the sequel to Haunting Blue. It was an offhand comment. It started off as flash fiction, which means it was supposed to be like a 1,000-word idea.
Okay.
And then it grew to a short story, and then it mm-hmm. kept going, and I didn't want to stop writing it because I enjoyed the voices so much, and I started to kind of learn who the characters were, and
right.
then I saw where it could go if I kept writing it, and
okay.
it wrote itself in about 4 or 5 months all total, which is quick for me. Mm-hmm. I'll admit I have another life as a business writer, so I have to work the fiction writing in
right.
maybe a couple times a week if I'm fortunate, maybe 2 or 3 days a week in a month. If I'm really lucky, I'll be able to really get into something. So, that's a pretty quick turnaround for me.
It is a quick turnaround for you, especially with that limited writing window for that particular project.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those things where it becomes a priority now. It was something I worked on when I didn't have anything else to do, and now it needs to get done. So
mm-hmm.
I've got a publisher waiting on it. Hopefully I'll have more readers waiting on it as time goes on, and so now it's got to get out there. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to where it goes.
I am extremely interested in some of the elements that you have brought into both of the works that I've had the privilege of reading, both Haunting Blue and Haunting Obsession. One of the things that I noticed was the relationships with the characters. With both of those works, RJ, I saw, and it sort of made me, this is going to sound kind of weird, envious of your wife, but also a little scared too, that a dude had such a depth of understanding into the female psyche. So where did you? Yeah, really, huh? Hey, the boy knows all our girl secrets, and then the flip side was, wow, your wife is so lucky to have somebody that understands.
I'm gonna let you tell her that later.
So where did you come up with that? I mean, also there's some notes that I have about, some of the guy stuff, but, that really hit me as being a female reader, saying, shit, you've been bumping around in the back of our heads, huh?
Well, the trickier part for me, as Haunting Blue has a teenage girl character. And you talk about really seem to get outside yourself sometimes. I was, you want to call it fortunate or unfortunate, but, as I was putting the last draft of Haunting Blue together, literally within a year or so of that, right before the publishers wanted it, I spent a period of time in fast food as a manager. And there were several, teenagers working there who were all going through the drama that you have in an
right.
environment like that.
Right.
And so I got to kind of re-immerse myself with that way of thinking shortly before I had to get Haunting Blue put together. And in some cases, it kind of confirmed things that I really wasn't so sure about. And in other cases, it caused me to change how I thought some of that through. But I don't know. I I like women. What can I say? But I also like, I prefer stories about strong women. I've always enjoyed that. Most of my favorite authors are women, and for whatever reason, that one of the things I was able to do with Haunting Blue was kind of have that little escape. You know, well, what if we could do a vulnerable teenager, but also have her tough at the same time? And how do you kind of work it backwards? How do you make that realistic? I want her to do this. Now, how do we make that happen? So,
okay,
I'm probably being too over analytical, but sometimes you just go through it and it kind of happens. So.
No, I totally get it. I used to sculpt years ago, and I distinctly remember time and time again sitting down with a lump of clay and literally losing time, and then looking back at the lump of clay going, holy crap, where'd that come from? You know, there's like no memory of the in-between part, and it's like, huh, that might be...
Yeah, you know, not so much Haunting Blue, but Haunting Obsession was a lot like that. It really was.
That's really interesting, because you also get a sense of time travel in Haunting Obsession.
Yeah.
I did, anyway.
No, I get you. I know what you mean exactly.
So I can completely see where you sort of went away for a little bit. Where did you get the idea for the character Maxie Marie? Is it as in your face as I think it is, or is it... Something completely different.
It's an homage to Marilyn Monroe, of course. There's in the book itself, in the notes, it's very specific that, you know, I wanted to write, I always knew I would use her in some way in some book sometime. I imagined way down the road in something maybe a little more realistic, and I wanted to be able to do it... do it justice and do it right. I don't even know exactly. It was just a vague idea, but it's really kind of hard to write about someone who's obsessed in a the way people are with Hollywood movie stars. But if you're going to talk about a beautiful blonde actress from the 50s, you don't have a whole lot of choices at that point. And then it becomes, okay, do I just go with it and make it obvious, or do I try and dress it up and be coy? And I decided to just make it be obvious because it's fiction, but at the same time, you know, why pretend? And it just made it easier to make it a more obvious homage. And,
I mean, right down to the...
It ended up working that way, I guess.
And right down to the way that she died, and, you know, a popular interpretation, you know, about it being not intentional. So I thought that was very interesting, and the way that you segued that moment into, you know, the present time.
Sure. And, of course, Marilyn was an enigma in a lot of ways. No one really knows what was going through her mind. And the sad part is, with all this fandom and all the theories and all the craziness around her life, there's really no way to kind of break through it all. And really, even if you wanted to find out the truth, there's so much legend built up around it. And a lot of what I'm talking about in the book is about that, you know. I have my own interpretation of what she may have been like. I'm sure, like just about anyone else, I'm pretty far off base. But the point is, she was a person just like anyone else who had all this stuff going on around her.
Right.
And
right.
As she later comes back as a ghost, things are just completely out of her control. She's as much a victim of how all this came about as anybody else in the book. So... I thought that would be fun to explore, and that was kind of, you know, part of what I wanted to do there.
One of the things that struck me as I was reading her actions, and please understand that I absolutely love the movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit. So this is not a derogatory comment at all.
Sure.
What kept coming to mind was Jessica Rabbit stating, I don't mean to be bad. I'm just drawn that way.
It's been a few years since I've seen that, but I had, you know, I do know what you're talking about.
And a lot of the things that, that Maxie did from a reader's perspective of, you know, only having read it once, I will go back and read it again probably in a week or two. But she was almost as obsessed as her number one fan that, you know, couldn't believe his his good fortune.
Yeah.
Right, right. That it's almost like each of them were acting outside of themselves, much like you did in writing the book.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was interesting.
Right, and I think, there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, when you think about Maxine's situation, you're right. In a lot of ways, she was obsessed with him. I was kind of thinking about this the other day as I was doing revisions.
Right.
In another way, she's kind of stuck with him, too.
Exactly.
It's not like she, because of the situation within the book, it's not like she has the freedom to go find other people, but
right.
she is comfortable enough with that, certainly, in the beginning, to be okay with that as the story progresses.
What prompted you to write about a different type of a ghost? And when readers are able to actually get their hands on Haunting Obsession, they'll know what I mean. There's a very specific type of haunting that occurs in this particular book that's very different from some of the other examples of hauntings and crisis apparitions that appear in Haunting Blue. What made you switch gears with that?
If I understand your question correctly, I think this is I'd probably have to credit Eric Garrison with that.
Okay.
Because he and I are in the same critique group.
Yes.
As you know, I've known him for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
And he's been on your show a couple times, but
love.
He had a short.
Love him, love his books, really do.
And as you know, in the novel, he and I kind of have this world building thing. We're kind of sharing characters and cameos and stuff like that.
Right.
Well, that happens
right.
as well. But besides that, he had a short story, which I love the idea too, but I took it in a different direction. If I understand your question correctly, you're talking about a ghost attracted to an object, per se, or attached to an object. Is that what you mean?
I'm talking about that. I'm also talking about the type of ghost that Maxine is, you know, versus some of the other crisis apparition ghosts and, you know, some of the elements of the classical hauntings that you saw in your first book. Starting.
Well, I'm going to be honest. Maybe this is a chance for me to get a little bit educated because I'm not quite sure what you mean, but I'd love to know.
Oh, okay. I didn't know how much of a spoiler you wanted.
I'm sorry?
I didn't know how much of a spoiler you wanted, so I was being specifically vague in our interview today.
It's hard for me to answer because I'm not
100%. I'm being too vague. Yes, there is an object in your second book that the spirit is attached to, but the type of relationship that the spirit has with the owner of the object is also very specific, and that's very different in terms of a haunting than the types of hauntings. So what made you go that way, or could you not help but go that way with the subject matter?
I don't know. It just seemed to work for the story.
Okay.
You know, basically, like I said, I look at ghosts as a literary tool, and, you know, I just kind of mix and match what worked best for my scenario, and I thought that, I'm sorry, and this just came to mind.
Like I said, I wasn't sure how much of a spoiler you wanted.
Yeah, let me back up
a little
with bit.
That. Okay, alrighty.
Well, this is what's on the back of the cover of the book. So
okay.
If you're talking about what is purchased or
yes.
and what that object is.
We can talk about that.
Okay.
I feel like this is a murder mystery.
Basically the initial inspiration for this came about by the fact that I saw something very similar to what the main character did, but my reaction was completely different from the main character.
Okay.
I was in a one of those souvenir shops, like portrayed in the story.
Okay.
And,
I love places like that, by the way.
I'm sorry?
I love places like that, by the way.
I generally do, too. this one particular thing, though, just completely freaked me out because I had no idea you could... And you know, since then, I've gone on the internet and I have found they're all over the place, but I had no idea at the time that somebody could be writing a check for their sewer bill or their utility or whatever, and the next thing they know, because they're a famous person, it's going to end up in a frame,
right,
at a souvenir shop on sale, which I'm like, wait a second, that this wasn't an autograph.
right.
This wasn't meant to give to a fan. It wasn't signed to anybody. It wasn't even just like just their signature on a picture or something like that. This was someone paying their rent or paying their bill or whatever, and that was the intention of it. It wasn't done for someone else. You know, I was appalled at the idea that not only did they lose money by writing the check.
Mm-hmm.
But then someone else was going to make a boatload of money later.
Right.
And that somebody could take that and that was perfectly fair game. I don't know. There was something I found. Maybe it is sort of some kind of idolization or respect for the dead or some sort of... It was creepy to me.
I was mortified that somebody could actually benefit from somebody else's despair.
Yeah,
with that,
not even necessarily despair, but just like just doing what anybody else does. They're writing a check to take care of business, you know.
Yeah.
In this particular case, this was someone who was already famous at the time, but they were just sitting down writing checks out of their checkbook. Someone got a hold of it, and you know, years after they're dead, someone's going to make a killing off of it. I mean, you know, in a monetary sense. So. It was new to me, and obviously it made enough of an impression. That was well over 10 years ago. I still remembered it, you know. But the kernel of the idea was, you know, that kind of repulsed me. Maybe that's too strong of a word, but I mean, it shocked me. I just didn't care for that sort of thing could happen. But what about the person who that doesn't shock, or who actually sees it as something collectible and desirable? And that was kind of the catalyst of wanting to write the story. It was actually a comment on Facebook where I made a post about having seen that, and then somebody, his name's Rodney Kallstrom, he's in indie horror writers, but he basically responded and said, hey, that'd be a good idea for a story. You know? and you know, you go, yeah, whatever, you know, and then there it is, it's in your brain, you know?
yep, festering.
And about a day later, I'm like, okay, well, I'll just write a quick flash fiction and get it on my system.
Right.
And then we know where that went, so.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it came from something that I personally... found kind of, I don't know, insulted my ethics, I guess. But then I thought, well, let's see what the person who isn't that way thinks, and explore what kind of a person that would be, and you know what could happen from there.
But isn't that where?
That, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, isn't that where a lot of good stories come from, though, RJ? Is something that, you know, maybe is a little bit of a pebble in your shoe, you know, something that's like, gosh, this does bother me. And then you try to put it off and you can't. You find yourself thinking about it and thinking about it. And like you said, I'm just going to write this to get it out of my system so I can get on with the important stuff, not realizing that maybe that is the important stuff.
Yeah, and it's weird. It really did kind of become my own haunting obsession. I couldn't stop
writing it once I started writing it
until I got it done. You know, so. I mean, it sounds corny, but that's actually what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I should have been writing something else the whole time. The next thing I knew, I had something completely different that I liked better. So I said, well, okay.
Don't buck the system, right?
Right.
We're going to take a quick break here. Don't go away. Author R.J. Sullivan with Haunting Obsession.
Oh, dude. You have got to come see this!
Mid-South Paranormal Convention 2012 is happening August 3rd through the 5th at the Ramada Plaza, 9700 Blue Grant Parkway in Louisville, Kentucky. Come on over and hang out with some of the paranormal's best. Keith H., the Booth Brothers, from Taps, Joe Ginn, Dustin Perry, and Rob Demarest. Supernatural historian and author Troy Taylor, spiritual medium and investigator Chris Fleming, John Tenney, and Christopher Lean of Paranormal State, The New Class, and many, many others. August 3rd through the 5th at the Ramada Plaza in Louisville, Kentucky. Brought to you by Louisville Ghost Hunter Society and WeareParanormal.com, the alternative to limitation. Tickets available now at www.louisvillegs.com. That's www.louisvillegs.com. $25 for a day pass, $45 for the entire weekend. Plus, get your chance to attend an overnight investigation of not just one, but two locations in nearby Elizabethtown, the Morrison Lodge and Severn Valley Church. Hanging with the paranormal's best, investigating two hotspot paranormal locations, what more could you ask for? All happening August 3rd through the 5th at the Ramada Plaza in Louisville, Kentucky. Man, you cannot miss this.
Programs, events, and listed speaker appearances are subject to change. All sales are fine. No refunds. Additional cost for overnight investigation applies. See www.louisvillegs.com for details.
Dude, get over here and check this thing out!
Hey guys, I just wanted to share something with you. I get the weirdest voicemail. There's this, on my cell phone, I don't even know how she got my number. There's this Babaruga woman that owns this little Greasy Spoon breakfast place that Phil and I go to. Although I don't know that we're going to go there much longer. I ordered an omelet and I happened to walk past the kitchen and she's got freaking cats sleeping on the stove right next to where she's cooking up my omelet. Needless to say, I didn't need it. Maybe I need to even rethink the coffee. Anyway, I think she's stalking me. She keeps showing up and finding things to do. One time she even pulled up a chair and sat down with me. This was about a year ago. Anyway, listen to this. Tell me what you think.
I'm sorry I can't come to the phone right now. Please leave a message after the beep.
Hey, Rini. Rini, I hear this Hannah House, this meet and greet this year gonna be on a Saturday. I gonna clear my calendar. I hear this, you know, tell me, I hear you and this Phil guy talking the other day over dinner. It's gonna be at noon until 4, and they say to come early. I think they want me to come early, and they got free things. And It's going to be meat and grit. The meat, I don't know, maybe they're going to have goat or lamb. And the grits is, that's a southern breakfast, this stuff in a bowl. Look like, kind of like a dog food, but it's supposed to be good. And they're going to have free, everything free, anybody going to come. And the Phil, he was saying something about this psychic. And, you know, that they welcome. But, you know, and I think to myself, Phil, why you say this? This psychic, they're going to know that they welcome. And then this guy was saying some celebrity, this Kit Edge guy, he's going to be there. Dale Kazmarek, he from the city Chicago area, he going to be there. And lots of surprise people. This Wanda Lewis, and they all going to be over there at the Hannah House, and everybody going to come. I think maybe you should call all your family and your friends, and maybe you going to check it out and maybe promote it someplace, you know, in the coffee house, and maybe somebody going to overhear, like you say I did, but I did not. I was invited in the conversation last year, and I'm going to maybe going to show up this year at the meet and greet, and I'm going to meet and greet the nice people going to coming out. So I think on Saturday, the 11th of August, from noon until 4, I'm going to see everybody at the henna house. Okay. Renee, I'm going to maybe see you and this field guy and these peoples in the coffee house again soon, okay? And you listen to the show on the Dead Speak Radio, yeah? Okay. I'm going to hear you on the radio. Bye-bye then.
Hello, all you beautiful people. Thank you very much. Please join us with RJ Sullivan. You can meet RJ at the Hannah House meet and greet on August 11th from noon to 4. Eric Chris Garrison will also be there, another paranormal author, as will Dale Kazmarek for all of you ghost hounds. RJ, you still with me?
Still with you.
Good. Good.
It's going to be a good time. It'll be... first place anybody will be able to get a hold of it, I believe, maybe 4 or 5 days before it goes online to the usual outlets. So
fabulous.
Should be a lot of fun.
You've reserved my hard copy. You're holding one back for me?
Actually, the hardback will not be available yet at that point.
Okay.
But I can hold one back for you.
Yes, yes, please do. Please do. I made a mess of the PDF one that you sent.
Cool.
Yeah. So, Hannah House, you're going to be there. Chris is going to be there. For those of us that are interested in reading, following your work, reading Haunting Obsession, having their very own copy, that will be the very first place they can get it, right?
Correct, yes. And by a bizarre coincidence, it's the, I think, within 5 days of the 50th anniversary of Marilyn Monroe's death.
Wow.
So, yeah, and that was not planned.
That was my next question.
It was, you know, the publishing schedule just happened to work out that way, and I said, okay, let's do that then. So,
how cool is that? For those people that can't make it to the meet and greet, I know that we have some overseas following. Thank you. But where can they get a copy of it? You have a website?
I do. It's rjsullivanfiction.com.
Okay.
And it will be on Amazon. It will be on Barnes & Noble and on the publisher's website, which is 7starpress.com. But,
cool.
You know, Amazon and B&N are the usual suspects. So usually that's available worldwide in some form. So that should be probably the obvious place to try to find it.
We've talked a little bit about Haunting Blue. Is that still in print? I know you were going to re-release it at some point.
It will be in print for another year, and then, well, I guess we'll just say it. Seven Star will pick it up and reissue it.
Fabulous.
Hopefully. And before then, they will be putting out Virtual Blue, which is the next book up. That's the sequel to Haunting Blue.
You finished that bad boy already?
I'm sorry?
You finished that bad boy already?
No, I am. I'm about halfway through.
You're so busy. Oh, my gosh.
Well, you know, it seems quick. These things have been... I've been working on them for a while. It's just that we signed the contracts. It took months to get Haunting Obsession out, and during all that time, I've had time to kind of going on the other. So,
yes.
That basically we're going to put out Haunting Obsession first, and then Virtual Blue a few months after that will be reissued.
Cool.
In a look that will show all of these as part of the same series. So, it's pretty exciting. I think it's going to be a pretty cool thing. Because then after that, we can continue to go forward with this publisher. And, you know, when I got the deal, it's exciting for a lot of reasons. They, I think because they're local and I knew who they were.
Okay.
Before I actually signed anything, they're in Lexington, Kentucky. So literally most of the places I'm going to, they will in most cases have a presence there anyway.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of times we'll be sharing tables. A lot of us authors will be together at the same kiosk. In fact, we did that earlier this year. even though I'm sitting there with the book by that other publisher, they let me join in anyway.
but that was cool.
I got to meet most of the authors at that point, and we had a really good time, and it was a fun weekend, and it'll be great to go forward as part of that publishing family. Another Indiana horror writer I'm going to give a plug to is Michael West, who is also on Seven Star Press. His book, Cinema of Shadows, is a ghost story along similar lines, which is out by the same publisher. So,
and what's the name of his book?
Cinema of Shadows.
Cinema of Shadows. And is it more similar to Haunting Obsession or Haunting Blue?
More, you would think Haunting Obsession, but actually more like Haunting Blue, I would say. Uh-huh. But Michael does his own, he does his own thing. He's more go for the throat horror, and that's a great thing. It's something I can never do. But he's really the traditional horror writer. Cinema of Shadows is definitely a ghost story, but mm-hmm. he doesn't pull any punches. He's a very good writer.
I would very much like to have a look at some of his, I mean, selfishly, you know.
He'll be there as well.
Oh, on the 11th?
He will be at the paranormal event, yes.
Excellent. If I have a short circuit because I'm trying to do 18 things while I'm there, can you please make sure I get a business card of his or something, or point him out to me?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Fabulous. I also am very curious about, I see that we're getting close on time, but there's two other things that I'm horribly curious about. One is three more books for your contract. I guess selfishly, what are they going to be about? And the other one is, what are your short stories and where are they published and all that good stuff?
Okay. Yeah, and I didn't quite finish the thought on Seven Star Press, but not only are they local, they really understand the e-market and that sort of thing. So they're going to do a really good job of getting the word out there, which I'm very excited about. And since we are short of time, I'll just...
No, that's okay. Because that is one of the things that I noticed when I met you originally with Haunting Blue, and then when we were talking about Haunting Obsession, it was very, very different in terms of the marketing goals. And that's fabulous, really.
It's great to have marketing goals, and to have someone who is close enough and willing to meet you halfway on the things you want to do. You know, when you're out there, you know, it's no fault of the publisher that they're in California. I was very fortunate to hook up with them at that point, but they're in California. They really can't help me beyond getting the book out, and I knew that going in, so that was no surprise.
Right.
But I also knew their shortcomings when I was looking for somewhere else to take the next one. So I couldn't be more happy with the change, which we'll leave it at that for now. So let's see, what else? There's two books. The character in Haunting Obsession, her name's Rebecca Burton.
Yes.
The investigator character is going to be kind of the carryover character that I'll be moving forward with.
Had no idea you had a thing for redheads, RJ. That was hysterical. I'm reading this and it's like, you've got three main characters, a blonde and two redheads. What's up with this?
I guess I do. Well, I hadn't thought of that. Rebecca's a redhead for a very different reason, because I think symbolically in a lot of ways, Rebecca is kind of, I guess you could say, the candle in the darkness, and I wanted that to be represented with her look.
Yes.
So she's got this bright red hair, and, you know, it's kind of corny and obvious, but it's in there, and that was the reason why. I wanted to always have her kind of have an outstanding look wherever she is, you know, catch people's attention and that sort of thing. But I have this huge backstory built around her.
Oh, okay.
Kind of come out through the next several pieces.
Okay.
Besides Haunting Obsession, Seven Star Press has put out what they call a Seven Star Single, which is a 99-cent ebook-only short story, which I, in my particular case, is called Backstage Pass, which is another story in which she plays a part to try and help out with different things. And, you know, as short stories go, it's 10,000 words, so it's a good chunk of a read for a short story. So, you know, anybody who finishes Haunting Obsession and wants to read more right away, there's an ad for it right in the back, so you know where to go next. So that actually is already out for those who want to check it out early.
And they can get that on Amazon and download it to their Kindle?
Amazon. It's on Amazon, and it's on Barnes & Noble.
Okay. Okay.
Probably other formats as well, but I know those two for sure.
Okay. So you guys can read it tonight.
And oddly enough, it's another, I'll just say it's another look at obsessed fandom.
Okay, so what does that say about you, RJ?
It tells you I'm an obsessed fan in a lot of ways, and maybe a little twisted, I guess.
Well, yeah, we pretty much cleared that up in the first 3 minutes of the show, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
That is really exciting. I really am, and there was a Facebook post recently where we were talking, you were talking and I joined in the discussion about a couple of things. One, there are two different posts. My brain is going far faster than my mouth, or I think even often my common sense. But I'm truly divided. I love the feel of a hardcover book in my hands, reading it. And I really have a difficult time with the e-readers. And I know that sounds crazy, and it's almost, you know, in this day and age, almost like a communist statement for me to make. What? You don't like the computer? What? But I think also from a marketing standpoint, you know, here you've just announced this short story on the air, and people can actually, I mean, they can be downloading it right now, and they can be...
They could be reading it while we're talking. Mm-hmm.
So I think from a marketing tool, and also I'm also bad in that I really like instant gratification. Not that I'm not willing to work for something and wait for things that are, you know, worth working toward, but I think everybody is a little bit, you know, we have that 2-year-old inside of ourselves that's stomping our feet going, gimme, gimme, gimme. And I think that those e-books satisfy a lot of things, you know, and let's not even talk about the environment because, again, I realize that my opinion is very unpopular, that I'm so old-fashioned.
You know, one of the things I like about Seven Star is the fact that they do the hardback, they do the soft cover, and they do electronic. They've got all three covered, and they present all three well. All three are good products. So, you know, they do support the e-environment very much so, and I'm thrilled with that because I do think ultimately it will become the future. But at the same time, they are aware of readers like you and like me too, honestly. I mean, you know, I'm not one of these kids right out of college that barely touched a book and has spent most of my time online. I grew up reading real books, for lack of a better term, and I prefer that a lot of the time. I do divide my time between my e-reader and my actual paper book, so I'm starting to transition over a bit more, but I'm with you. A lot of what you said, and I certainly understand it.
I don't know if I'm just old-fashioned. I mean, I love antiques, and you know, I like the feel of well-made things. So that probably has something to do with it as well. And I have many fond memories of, you know, 3-day snowstorms where I'm snowed in, and you know, I've got two little kids, you know, 3 and 4 years old. Fortunately, I spent a lot of time at used book sales and was just able to pull, you know, whatever book off the shelf and read it by candlelight to my kids or firelight. So I think that that has something to do with it as well.
Sure.
But speaking of kids, one of the other things that you had talked about in one of your posts was labeling genres, you know, young adult versus mature. And that was a very interesting discussion that you had on Facebook.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's been something I've started off as a pet peeve of mine, and I've kind of come around to my thinking on it. When the young adult subgenre first came to my attention, I didn't even know what that meant. It didn't make any sense to me that we were going to separate our science fiction and our fantasy and mm-hmm. other such books and have young adult reading. There are books geared towards teenagers and young adults, and there mm-hmm. are books geared towards adults, but it always seemed to me that the distinctions were pretty obvious without having to say them until recently, you know.
Right.
I suppose the reality is the opposite, but I always thought that kind of limited your audience. I mean...
Oh, I'm not supposed to read this because it's outside of what I am. Right?
Right. I mean, yeah. I enjoy Harry Potter as much as any teenager or 20-something, I imagine. And the idea that this is... we're going to label it young adult because, I mean, to the point that when J.K. Rowling came out with her next book, they actually called it her first adult book. I'm like, what does that mean? You know,
right.
what does that make the first 7 books, which I have all on my shelf? so it's also watching the classic sci-fi and fantasy become relabeled, you know, on the e-shelves and in paperback, stuff that I read in college and read and still revisit, you know, the mm-hmm. Isaac Asimov and Andre Norton and all those, which you never called those young adult. I suppose that's who maybe was reading them. But I reread a lot of them to this day, and it never occurred to me this is for the teenager. This is just a science fiction book, or this is just a fantasy book, and you know it's. But that's just me, maybe showing my age, I guess, showing my romantic side to that kind of thinking.
No, I'm with you 100%, but maybe a little, and I don't want to say backwards, but I think that there are many ways to arrive to the same conclusion. When I was growing up, I was fortunate enough to have a real library in my home, and I read a lot of the classics at a very young age. You know, like, I read Lord of the Flies when I was probably 7 or 8, and I read things like Poe and a lot of the Stephen King stuff, and, you know, really, if you think about it, that a lot of that's pretty, you know, risque. But sure. I read it at a very young age because there were no divisions in the library in my parents' home. And I suppose they figured that if I was old enough to pluck it off the shelf and read it, that I was probably ready to read it. And I have done the same thing with my own children. You know, and certainly my library is nothing compared to what my parents was, but it certainly was lovingly put together. And, you know, they read Shakespeare and Edgar Allan Poe long before they were in high school, which I thought was pretty cool. But anyway, one last time, Haunting Obsession, available for the very first time. Phil's playing with Grateful Dead dancing bears across the keyboard. How am I supposed to talk with them, with these Grateful Dead dancing bears? What the hell was I saying? Oh, I was trying to tell people that if they come to the Hannah House meet and greet on August 11th, they can get their very own old-fashioned real book of
right.
Haunting Obsession from R.J. Sullivan. They can get books by Chris Garrison. And you mentioned one other, Michael Ward?
Michael West,
which is a horror writer that I am looking forward to investigating. And they can get some of your other works on Amazon.com. right? Yes. And they can visit your website, which is?
rjsullivanfiction.com. No spaces or dots or anything like that, but it's RJ Sullivan Fiction. I do also want to say that for, you know, your question about is this, you know, who is Maxine based upon?
Yes.
The cover and the interior art for this book will go live tomorrow, and that would have taken all question out of your mind.
Well,
exactly what we were going for. But my point is that we're going to premiere we're going to show the cover, and we're going to show interior art, all done by Bonnie Wasson. That's Wasson, I believe, and I'm hoping I said it right.
But okay.
Incredible talent. She's on Seven Stars art staff.
And, okay.
When I first signed with them and I saw some of her work, I said, I really think she can bring this to life. And I'm just going to say she did an absolutely amazing job. I'm so very thrilled with what the cover looks like. So I hope everyone checks it out, either through Seven Star or through Facebook, or we'll be getting the word out through various channels. And you should check it out tomorrow. It looks really cool.
I will. I will check out your feed tomorrow on Facebook. And I'm always glad to support another gifted artist. So
thank you so very much for having me on today. This was a lot of fun.
I really enjoyed having you, RJ. And again, thank you so much for trusting me with your copy of Haunting Obsession and letting me read it before a lot of other people, and giving me the privilege of having you on the air before its release.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And thanks for asking me. And like I said, this was a whole lot of fun.
Well, good.
Do I have time to mention a few people, or are we about done?
Yes. Mention away, and then we'll sign out.
Okay. I wanted to mention, give a shout-out to Lily Monster Meat. That's her model name, I guess. She really helped out a great deal with some of the early marketing.
And she's a beautiful girl. Very versatile, too.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm trying to
look at notes and talk at the same time.
That's okay.
She'll be in the book trailer, which will be out in a couple of weeks. She provided a full-size standee, which will be there at the event, and
yes,
really helped out when I really had nothing else to really show early on in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And also Noelle Williams, who's a 3D artist,
mm-hmm,
who really has come to rescue a lot of points in this early process to help out with things. So I wanted to mention them both and say that they've been very valuable in getting us this far with everything. So I wanted to get that in there.
And also artists, too. You know, I think that anybody that does work as an artist or an actor, those people are also very creative and really have a lot to add to the final product of whatever it is we're trying to put together.
Yes. Well, thanks so much.
It was my pleasure, RJ. I will see you on August the 11th, my birthday. And the rest of you, until we meet again, stay haunted.
Lower your vibrations. Go raise arms.
Say one of our names.
Say your name again.
Hi, this is Dave Schrader from Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio. You're listening to 10 Renee Graham.
Thank you so very much.
This is Mike McDowell from the Indiana Ghost Crackers and Chaos Tours saying welcome to
Chaos and get down with the sickness.
Yeah.
Say your name again.
Stop it.
Say it again.
This is Jeff Belanger, and when I'm not out looking for ghosts, haunted places, and weird stuff all over the planet, I'm listening to Paranormal Radio with Renee Graham. I never miss a show, and if you miss a show, I swear I'll haunt you.
Thank you.
That's good. Paranormal Radio, taking you beyond the limits. Sundays, 6 to 7 p.m. Central.
Simulcast on Pulsar and live.